Thank you for downloading the very popular Ira Kaufman podcast presented by Ed Morse Cadillac Tampa and Ed Morse Cadillac Brandon. You know, when we say presented by, that's just not a line on a piece of paper. We are so proud to be affiliated with Ed Morse Cadillac Brandon and Ed Morse Cadillac Tampa. More than 70 years of Ed Morse family dealerships across the state of Florida and Ed Morse Cadillac Tampa and Ed Morse Cadillac Brandon. Those are your Tampa, your Hillsborough County, the only Cadillac dealerships. Get it started at EdMorseCadillacTampa.com, EdMorseCadillacBrandon.com. We usually have all the brand new offers for the new month when it starts, but we were recording on the 31st, and we just wanted to talk about Ed Morse Cadillac. All the great offers, though, are by now right at EdMorseCadillacTampa.com, EdMorseCadillacBrandon.com, and of course, you can always get a like-new certified pre-owned Cadillac. All certified pre-owned Cadillacs are inspected, reconditioned, and warrantied. Visit EdMorseCadillacTampa.com and EdMorseCadillacBrandon.com.
I'm the demographic for X-Lax.
Happy Thursday. Happy February 1st. January is gone on the Ira Kaufman podcast. I'm Steve Isbitz of JoeBucksFan.com, here with the sage of Tampa Bay sports, Mr. Ira Kaufman. Ira, it is great to see you before you head off to Minneapolis.
Steve, do you realize that by the time our growing number of listeners, and that's right, I'm talking about you in Guam and you in Pago. Steve, by the time they listen to this podcast, I will be freezing my Rieslings off in frosty Minnesota, where the high for Thursday is a nifty 6 degrees, Stephen. DeKemper was there. It was 28 degrees. He's over there, wearing a short sleeve shirt over there. I've got layers and layers, and I'm still going to be cold.
Of course, I was referring to Lee DeKemper, the other Joe of JoeBucksFan.com. He's flying back today on his Super Bowl duty, and Ira, before we get to some of the interesting things Lee learned, but we'll hit on that first before we get to some really neat Hall of Fame stuff and some other Buck stuff. You know, how about all those offers from Ed Morse Cadillac Tampa? Ira, February's here.
I thought it was going to end in Christmas. I did. Maybe New Year's Eve. Here we are. The calendar's flipping to February, and they're still going strong over there, Steve. And I said it the other day. I don't understand how these monthly payments keep going down, because everything around us keeps going up, including gas prices and water bills and air conditioning tax, you know.
Are you using a lot of water these days, Ira? Extra water?
You got to sprinkle, my man. You got to sprinkle.
I don't know. My water bill looks pretty good these days, Ira.
I had a toilet leak last month. My water bill was about $240. I almost plotzed when I opened the envelope over there.
Everybody can Google plotzed if you
had
need
toilet
to
leak.
There you go. All right, Sage. Lee DeKemper, Joe, was out there at Super Bowl Media Day, and of course, the reason we're there is, in addition to have fun,
they think he's there to eat, Steve. You gotta put a disclaimer in there that he was working hard, Steven. No question.
Absolutely. The point of going is to talk to anybody and everybody about the Bucks, some on the record, some off the record, to get perspective and to talk to some of these ex-Bucks or guys who might have been pursued by the Bucks, any connection, just to learn as much as possible.
And the Brian Bilks of the world, Steve, that don't have an axe to grind either way, that can give you an objective view of the Bucks.
Well, he's not really objective with Mike Smith as his brother-in-law, but that's a whole nother story. But anyway, Lee talked to Ronald Darby. Exhibit A, witness number 1A.
He targeted Darby Monday night.
At the Super Bowl Media Day, went up to Darby and simply said, started asking questions about the Jameis Winston investigation, because, if for fans who don't realize, Darby, after it was announced that Jameis was being investigated by the NFL, Darby issued a statement saying, I was in the Uber, there was somebody else in the Uber, and whatever is
he
being...
He said we were in the back, right? Jameis, yeah. And I were in the back.
He said he and Jameis were in the back, which to me, I mean, we all know Jameis was accused of groping. I mean, give me a break. These are 6'4" guys sitting in the back of a car. It means you can't touch anything in the front. Yeah, I mean, that's silly. But yeah. Okay, so in the back.
Can you imagine, Steve, imagine the scene. Darby, I don't believe he was at a podium. I believe he was in a chair. And, Steve, he's surrounded by Eagle riders. They, you know, they want a little piece of Ronald Darby. They're talking about Brady. You might be matched up with Gronkowski once in a while. How are you going to do that? And all of a sudden, here comes DeKemper. Boom. like a barroom bouncer. You know, elbows flying, gets a spot right in front of Darby, and Darby's expecting something on, you know, New England's, you know, how great a year the Eagles had, maybe Foles, and we believe in Foles, and here comes the Kemper. Ronald, I'm interested in whether the league has, have they interviewed you yet on the Jameis Winston investigation? He must have dropped this glass of Coke, man, I'm telling you.
Typical fan isn't going to understand what that's actually like, but, you know, it's sort of like that.
But there's no way he expected that question at a Super Bowl.
You know, listening to the audio, Lee sent me the audio. You know, we're not sharing that here, but Lee sent me the audio. He buttered him up with a couple of general questions first and then hit him with, hey, you know, the Uber stuff. So Darby didn't want to talk, but then he talked a little bit. But the point was, the big takeaway, Ira, was that Ronald Darby said the NFL has not talked to him yet about the Jameis investigation.
It's what the hell are you waiting for?
2.5 months. You can't interview the guy for half an hour?
2.5 months. I said at the time that you, me, and DeKemper could wrap this up in about 3 weeks. And I still believe it. How many people do you have to talk to?
So, and keep in mind, Darby's not on trial. He's not accused of anything. He's simply went out of his way to say, I was there and I know what happened.
Can't the league send somebody to Philly in December and sit with the guy for half an hour?
Ira, what makes this even worse is the league offices, they're in New York. What is it, 2-hour drive to Philly?
Oh, take an Amtrak.
Come
boom,
on.
You're there.
Exactly. An Uber might be $220 bucks. Come on.
Now you're wondering whether they talked to Jameis Winston or not. We don't know that.
Who knows what they've done? I don't understand the delay. If you're up there, or actually you will be up there, if you can get your hands on any NFL officials, Goodell, your old buddy.
I'll try.
It would be great to find out, to get a clue of the process. I talked to some NFL officials at the Pro Bowl about this, about the process. I didn't really get a good answer enough to share. I don't want to sit here and share gray areas on process, but the fact that Darby didn't get a chat with the NFL, an investigator, even 20 minutes on a conference call.
He's more than a person of interest, Steve.
He's a witness.
He's a witness. A self-claimed witness.
It's very disturbing. I hope Team Glazer saw that and said, you know, can we pick up the pace, guys?
At least one Glazer, if not more, could be in Minneapolis this weekend. They usually go to the Super Bowl now. They usually attended Goodell's address, which used to be on a Friday. Well, I think Goodell talked on Wednesday. So I don't know if the Glazers want to be in Minneapolis for 4 days, but they traditionally would roll in on Friday and attend Goodell's address and then stay through the weekend and go to the game. So you wonder if they're going to have that kind of conversation. Steve, what are the implications of this? Well, it's not fair. It's not fair to the Buck organization. It's not fair to Winston. And you could argue it's not fair to the Uber driver, you know, if she's to be believed. Steve, how about a little sense of urgency. Just a little sense. You know, how many players in the NFL are being investigated right now? I mean, you have a backlog of 100 players. You know, you're whittling them down. What has taken so long? I'm going to try to get some answers in Minneapolis. We'll see if anybody wants to talk about it. But that's good work by DeKemper. He got the answer that we needed out of Darby. And yeah, he didn't want to go into specifics about what happened that night. You and I understand that. But he did answer the question. He has not been questioned.
It's distressing, and part of it, Ira, is I think of just the Joe bag of donuts selling tickets for the Buccaneers. These are the people on the front lines. They are calling people about renewing tickets or group tickets or people on a list. And you know what? Those people, a lot of them are saying, hey, well, you know what? I felt funny about the Jameis thing.
Well, I don't know if he's going to be playing that day.
What do we know about that? Or is he in trouble? My wife doesn't like Jameis now. A lot of times those sales reps, they ask if somebody says, well, I'm not sure I'm going to renew. They ask why. Yeah, what's going on? What do you think of the team this year? They try to get a pulse and all those people.
And then they compare notes, all of them.
Yeah, they compare notes. But it's just I think it's good for the organization to resolve it quickly, whatever the answer is. Certainly for the Bucs, who have no backup quarterback under contract now except for Ryan Griffin. Hey, if you knew Jameis might miss a few games, if you had a good feeling of that would happen, even if it's not six, maybe it's two or three or something. I don't know. But you know what?
Maybe that gives Fitzpatrick leverage, if that's the case. But if you think Winston's going to be available for all 16 games, barring an injury, maybe you let Fitzpatrick go and you stick with Griffin. There's a lot of factors to this.
It would be nice to know. And as you said, when this happened a long time ago, get off your ass. What's taking so long? 2.5 months, you can't talk to the one-star witness?
And you made a good point, Steve. You didn't even know you made it, but you made it. The Winston bashers, you know, who are out there, and they had nothing to say for 2 years, and now they're out in force. you know, about his eating the W's. He lost control in New Orleans with Lattimore, and now he's got this thing hanging over his head. Well, they're prone to believe that Winston's guilty. You know, that's their inclination. He's guilty. He did it. Well, wouldn't it be nice to know one way or another? The odds are I think he's going to be exonerated. I've been told from some people in the league that, you know, have no axe to grind in this situation, that they don't think he's going to face a suspension over this. I don't know how they know that if Ronald Darby's not even being interviewed.
Amen, brother. I was just going to say the same thing. If they haven't talked to Darby, those people who gave you that information, it feels like they were just kind of reaching a little bit, you know, maybe not dealing with enough of the facts. If you didn't talk to Darby yet, then who knows? Maybe his story will fold like a cheap suit by the time they grill him. I don't know.
Could this thing have been settled? Could Winston have already settled this thing?
Well, something like that could be in the works. Who knows why, but you would think the league investigating a guy like Darby clearly should cooperate. He has nothing to lose. So,
and he wants to cooperate because he's got a story to tell that gets Jameis off the hook.
Yeah, and he's not accused of anything. You know, so who knows? It all goes back to this whole thing stinks, and we'll see where it goes. We'll see where it goes, Ira. All right, now, I don't know if we made a big enough fanfare, Ira, in the beginning of the podcast. Of course, anybody who listened to last podcast heard you talk about the Hall of Fame. You are one of the 46 selectors.
48, my friend.
Well, there's two ex-players. I don't count those guys. You're one of the 46 esteemed media guys across the nation, and you've been doing this since 2005.
That's right.
You're presenting John Lynch for time number 5, and you know, you're very passionate about this. I got to hear your speech.
In its entirety,
which is a rare treat. The opening we heard, everybody heard last week, you got your one-liner joke of, you could tell your joke again.
If you're tired of my thick Midwestern accent, you know what you got to do today.
And there you go. But the close is very strong, Ira, very impressive close. Maybe you'll share it if he gets in. You'll share the close. I think that'll be nice. Not appropriate to share it now.
But you thought I made some solid points. No question.
The case is very, very strong for Lynch. The problem for Lynch is everybody else. So, Ira, you know, you want to handicap the field for us? You are the expert. You've studied all these guys, 15 finalists. Who are your top seven guys?
All right, let's break it down. There's 5 offensive linemen. There's 4 defensive backs. There's 1 running back in Edgerrin James. 3 wide receivers led by Moss, Terrell Owens. And some people think that those guys are going to cancel each other out. And Isaac Bruce is going to sneak in there. I mean, anything's possible. And then you got 2 linebackers, Ray Lewis and Brian Urlacher. All right, let's break it down this way, Steve. If Ray Lewis doesn't get in, there's going to be an investigation. Ray Lewis is probably one of those guys that you could say, Ray Lewis, and you can sit down. I don't think that's going to happen because that's presumptuous. And the selectors don't want to be presumptuous because that might rub somebody the wrong way. Although it's been done. Joe Montana sat down. He saves us 8 minutes. We like it. And plus 10 minutes of discussion. So Ray Lewis is one of the spots. That means 14 guys are fighting for 4 spots. This is the math. A maximum of 5 modern-day guys can get in. Somebody said to me the other day, well, you could elect only 2 or 3. I said, no, that's not going to happen. The maximum's 5. They're going to put 5 in. That's just the way it is. There's a backlog. So there's going to be 5. They're not going to leave any spots open. Okay.
Sure.
So there's going to be 14 guys fighting for 4 spots. Randy Moss, to me, that's a Hall of Famer. I don't think the league had ever seen anything like Randy Moss when he broke in. He was spectacular as a rookie in Minnesota. The knock on him, he said he only plays hard when he wants to. That don't go over well in the room, but I just think he was one of those generational talents that they don't come along very often. He played with Brady. He caught 22 touchdown passes, you know, and they probably should have won the Super Bowl. And they went, 18-0 going into the Giants Super Bowl game.
Sure.
18-0. And then you got Terrell Owens, who's been shut down twice, and waiting for his turn in the spotlight. Now, I haven't voted for Owens for 2 years. I have changed my mind. Since the last meeting, I've talked to other people that I respect. Not you and DeKemper. Other people I respect.
That's understood.
And I ran Owens' name past them, and what they basically said was, yeah, lousy teammate, but too good a player. Too good a player.
And I hate to phrase it this way, but I think the voters who are not like you, the ones who are caught up in some of the ego and the politics, You didn't vote for him because you didn't think he deserved it, T.O. But now you've come around, and that's fine. It's part of the process. But I think the guys who were quote-unquote punishing, and I hate to use that word, but punishing T.O., I think maybe they feel that he's suffered enough. He's paid his debt. Do you feel that there might be a little bit of that?
There might be a little bit of that. Now, if that happens, Steve.
That's three.
And two receivers go in, that's three. Now, what's the math, Steve? 12 guys fighting for two spots. Now, here's how I look at the offensive line. They could cancel each other out. You got Alan Faneca. The guy was fabulous. Kevin Mawai. Hutchinson's eligible first time. Joe Jacoby.
Jacoby at the end of his rope.
Yeah,
this is his last year,
rope.
Right?
Yeah. And, you know, there's one hog in, but they were so good, Steve, that maybe they should have two guys in. Russ Grimm's already in. And Jacoby is said to be the one guy that could block Lawrence Taylor. Coming off the edge by himself.
I know what you would say if you were presenting for a Jacoby. You'd say, gentlemen, I can say, this is my IRA.
Right? I'm here.
Gentlemen, it's Hogs, not Hog.
Not bad, Steve. I'm glad I'm not doing Jacoby. So the committee doesn't like safeties, but they like offensive linemen. They're always putting in an offensive lineman. Now you got five of them. They could cancel each other out or one guy could squeeze through. We'll see. We will see. I don't think Edgerrin James is getting in this year. Heck of a player, very versatile, good pass catcher, but I don't think he's going to get in. Urlacher is interesting. Some people think he's a first-time ballot guy. This is his first year of eligibility. Defensive player of the year, Steve. 20 interceptions for a middle linebacker, very strong.
All-decade guy.
All-decade guy. But do they put two middle linebackers in 1 year? That's something he's facing. You know what? That should not be a factor. Should not be a factor.
Absolutely should not be a factor.
And then that leads me to the defensive backs. And by the way, they are the first position group that are going to be discussed. Last year, defensive backs were one of the last ones. This year, it goes by random. And so I'm the third guy up. Goes alphabetically within the group.
So let me just rewind just a little bit, Ira. You've got, and you didn't mention Boselli.
And I didn't mention Boselli.
So that further muddies the offensive line mix.
Yes.
And I think just as you've said before, these voters are human. That really waters it down. Five offensive linemen, and obviously everybody.
Some guy's going to like Faneca. Somebody's going to like Boselli.
Everybody there is good, so it's a tough spot. Do you think there's any chance that two offensive linemen get in?
No, I don't. I think one defensive back is going to get in. And it's my job to make sure that it's John Lynch. The order is going to be Brian Dawkins, Ty Law, John Lynch, and Everson Walls. Now, you weighed in on Walls the other day, and I think you did it very intelligently. This is Walls' final year of eligibility before he goes into the senior pool. Yet he's never been in the room before. So you're asking, what gives with that? And are people going to feel guilty? Let's get him in. My answer is no. Get him as a senior candidate. He's never been in the room before. You don't vault into the room after 19 years of eligibility and then get, you know, voted into the hall. That sounds a little crazy, doesn't it? I mean, supposedly these are the same people that are picking and whittling the fields down. So, you know, to me that leaves Lynch, Dawkins, Ty Law. Ty Law was a heck of a corner. He mugged the receivers, Tony Dungy's receivers in Indy, and he pressed the envelope those playoff games. He had three picks against Peyton Manning. In one game, one playoff game, three picks. How did he do it? He mugged guys, the Reggie Waynes or whatever. You know, he got in their face, and he didn't get called for it.
He had a pass rush, too.
And he had a pass rush, and they didn't call it. So he played up to the limits. But I think it's going to come down to Lynch and Dawkins. I really do. Last year, I think they split the vote. This year, hopefully, I can convince these people that if you're going to put a safety in, which is long overdue in terms of a modern-day safety. Lynch has to go in before Dawkins. I'm cautiously optimistic. I don't want to get overly confident, but I think Lynch has a heck of a case. You just heard the case. I wish you were in the room, Izvitz, because I'd have two Lynch votes between you and I. I know that.
It's a tough spot. I mean, I got to say, Ira, I felt better about your chances last year just because, man, it's a good field. And you're going to have a lot of strong arguments, and you've got a lot of work to do to sway at just the right time. And the Brian Dawkins thing's a killer because you've got a good safety, somebody that everybody...
An all-decade safety.
And everybody in that room watched him play, which I think helps.
A lot of playoff games. Yeah.
And there's also been a lot of support for him. and he's got the numbers. He was a finalist last year. So my question to you is, Ira, take us into the room. There's discussion 10 minutes after each guy, and then a little discussion later. And
well, Terrell Owens was 45 minutes of discussion. LaDainian Tomlinson was 30 seconds.
So after everybody's presented, after all the guys go and after all the discussion, is there more discussion, like an overview discussion?
Well, at that point, they hand out the ballots, and you cut the field down from 15 to 10. They gather it up, Deloitte and Touche, one of those fancy firms. And they got 10 people in the room. They all got ties on. We're dressed like slobs.
Sure.
Peter King's got a half a Danish hanging out of his mouth. And these people are coming in. They're looking like GQ. And, you hold your ballot up in the air, and somebody grabs it behind you. Then they go into a room, and they disappear. And people joke around. We go get another cup of coffee. And in about 15 minutes, they announce, okay, these are the 10 finalists. For each of the last 2 years, Lynch has survived that first cut.
And then, but after they cut to 10, is there more discussion? Or
They open it up. Does anybody have anything else they want to add?
I got you. So,
and usually there's not much discussion at that point.
What happens, though, in any of this process if somebody starts saying, somebody speaks up and says, hey, Lynch doesn't belong? Or starts saying, you hear somebody come out and say, well, Dawkins is better than Lynch. Does that happen?
I think that would boomerang. Because, first of all, now you're talking about somebody that's in the final 10. You're calling them, not qualified to be in the Hall. That's a hard argument. That's a tough road. He's already survived the first cut. Usually, it's tough to rip people in that room.
So what you're saying is...
You ask questions, why did this happen? Why did this happen? But at this point, and I know, Steve, almost every year without exception, when you make the final list of 15, you were a heck of a player. There's no stiffs in that room. There's no bums in that room.
During the discussion period after you present Lynch, does anybody say to you, Ira, we've heard your arguments, blah, blah, blah. Ira, why is John Lynch more deserving than Brian Urlacher? Does that ever happen?
No, they compare position players.
Position only.
Now, what did happen last year is I gave this flowery Lynch speech. A couple of people then talked up Lynch in support, including the guy out of Denver. Talked about what Lynch did in Denver. I was feeling very good. Then, somebody else grabbed the microphone just before the end of the discussion. Hold on. I got one more question. How come Brian Dawkins made the all-decade team and your guy didn't? I had to have an answer. I wasn't expecting it.
And you've said it before. It's just a timing element. The guy jumped in the middle.
Dawkins played throughout the 2000s. That's just the way it is.
Yeah, Lynch played over two decades. It hurts in the grand scope.
That's what made Sapp's candidacy so fantastic, was he was a two-time all-decade player. Very, very rare. That shows you how dominant Sapp was.
Absolutely. So I guess the most important question I have for you, Ira, is before you hear all the pitches, who are you voting for as it stands right now?
Well, without hearing the pitches.
Without hearing the
pitches. And they do change. I'll give you an example. Say about 4 years ago, nobody gave Roger Worley, if you remember Roger Worley, he was a corner for the St. Louis Cardinals, and a very good one. But he wasn't flashy. But the guy out of St. Louis, Bernie Miklas, been around a long time, well-respected, He made a heck of a speech for Worley. Talked about how he always took on the other team's best receivers in the 70s, the Drew Pearsons of the world, the Paul Warfields, and wherever they'd line up, the St. Louis Cardinals, who had a pretty good team back then under Don Coryell. Jim Hart was the quarterback, and they had Terry Metcalf. And Worley, unlike Brent Grimes in the infamous Julio Jones game in Atlanta. Unlike Brent Grimes, the Cardinals sent Worley over to, shadow the team's number one receiver. And he did so very successfully, and the guy had some numbers to back it up, how he took these guys out of the game, basically, big-time players. And when the smoke cleared, Roger Worley was standing on a podium, with a gold jacket and a bust. So things can happen. A lot of people didn't think Sapp was going to get in their first year. As preposterous as that sounds for those of us that watch Sapp play every game, these are guys that didn't. And they knew Sapp by reputation. That reputation off the field wasn't very good. And some people wanted to make him wait, which is crazy. So things happen. And last year, you know, you don't have to go back very far, Steve. Nobody saw Jason Taylor getting in his first year of eligibility. So what happens? Lynch and Dawkins beat each other up. They both make the final 10. And they advance no further. And here comes Jason Taylor because they love pass rushers. And that's good news for Simeon Rice down the line. First things first, he's got to make the list of finalists and he's got to be in the room. But he made the list of 25s. He's making progress. They love pass rushers. And here comes Jason Taylor. He was the only one. This year, there's none. So, look, I agree with you. This year, I think it's a little better class overall than last year because you've got Ray Lewis and Moss, the two transcendent players.
Yeah, it's tough sledding. So who's your five going right in before we hear the your early
Lewis,
early handicap?
Lewis, Moss, Owens, Lynch.
Of course.
And Faneca. Those are my five.
I wish you luck, Ira, man. I really do. I'm pulling for you. I wish there's more I could do. I've even tried to get people to do some other things to help, encourage.
DeKemper tells me he twisted some arms out there in Minneapolis. I didn't know whether to smile or cringe at the thought of DeKemper trying to make the case for John Lynch with Vic Carucci and Peter King.
Well, I think it's at least a wash.
You know what? He said that. He said there were two guys that he talked to, both the selectors, and one guy was very receptive. And when the DeKemper said to the second guy, "Hey, I was really sweating this John Lynch thing," you know what the guy's answer was? "He should be." So that didn't sound too good, Steve.
Yeah, it's
rough. It's a rough process.
It's a rough process, and Lynch has got to get in because it's going to get even rougher for him.
Guess who's coming along next year?
Well, forget about Ed Reed. Forget about that, Ira. If Rondé or Simeon make the final 15, someone's going to say, "Well, what are we putting every Buccaneer in?"
Yes.
You know?
Yes.
It's tough. This is the time. This is the spot. Anything can happen, and hopefully Lynch's profile getting raised a little bit with the Niners.
You know what? That's
can't
an interesting
hurt.
Aspect of it. I'm not going to mention it. You heard my presentation.
No, you can't. You
can't mention it. Not supposed to be a factor.
But it can't hurt.
But it can't hurt.
Name recognition always helps, and he is excellent first-year GM.
Excellent first-year GM.
For 1 year. And he's very affable. He's likable. He's out there. I'm sure the media who's dealt with him as a GM has liked him. So that can't hurt.
It wouldn't hurt them getting a phone call back from John Lynch if he's wearing a gold jacket, Steve. Yeah, it wouldn't hurt. This is human nature.
Probably
human
not. Nature. All right, so Sage, let's shift gears back to the Bucks. We had a little thing on JoeBucksFan.com the other day. Rick Stroud, Tampa Bay Times, was on the radio. And as you know, beat writers, when they're on the radio, they say things that they don't type up.
Is there a radio show you two hoodlums don't monitor?
Everything is monitored, Ira. Did you hear me transcribe Josh Freeman on...
Unbelievable. Josh Freeman.
On a CFL podcast.
Oh, my goodness. Unbelievable.
Yeah, when this is your passion, Ira, when you care about football 24-7, you listen to these things. So Stroud's on the radio, and he's talking about McCoy's comments at the Pro Bowl. And some of the comments Gerald made, he made many, many comments, were about, revolved around, "Hey, you know, we need to do a better job, Levante and I,
to monitor our locker room,
holding guys accountable sooner and just being more on top of that," was the gist of what he said. And, of course, a lot of fans were like, come on, man.
That infuriates Buck fans.
Yeah,
infuriates.
Because McCoy, that was his eighth season?
Yeah, he's the longest tenured defensive player.
I mean, you shouldn't be learning these things that late.
He's the leader. He's the self-avowed leader of that unit.
On the defense, at the very least, and the guys vote him captain every year, so that was discouraging. But Stroud believed, he expressed, that the reason Gerald McCoy was talking about that, and he talked about the Swaggy Baker incident in Charlotte when Quan Alexander finally called him out and some of the other guys piled on, too little, too late. But Stroud said that he talked to Bucks coaches about that. And
Didn't identify the coaches,
but he said they told him, it's very nice. We're glad it happened. But where was that in August or September? And the coaches had a mindset of too little, too late. And he said, look, I know that the coaches want them to do that more, the McCoys and the leaders in the locker room, which is standard. Police things better. What did you make of all that? And if my question to you is, if Bucks coaches wanted more out of their captains, then why the heck didn't they get in McCoy's face and say, straighten out these guys here? Swaggy's a problem. We need you to fix it. In September, where's the disconnect?
You know, Steve, didn't I say on this podcast before the 2017 season, correct me if I'm wrong here, but didn't I say, well, I don't know who's going to be defensive captains or whatever, but I said Quan Alexander needs to be one over McCoy. I basically said McCoy's not going to be a captain. I predicted. Well, that was wrong. That was wrong. But future events, as they unfolded, including, you know, the final road game in Charlotte and what happened post-game, I think I've been vindicated, basically. Quan Alexander took it upon himself. A third-year player, still, you know, finding his way in this league. Heck of a player. But he's not a six-time Pro Bowler like McCoy. And he's the guy that gets in Baker's face and breaks the ice finally. If the story's true, I have no reason to think it's not, that the coaches do feel this way. It may not totally reflect well on Jason Light either, in terms of the kind of people you got in the locker room. Where are the leaders?
Well,
I think that's a problem.
We've been
and also, it goes to the question of bringing in guys like Tlaib and Michael Bennett, you know, into this locker room that's not brimming over with veteran leadership, it seems to me.
It's a very interesting question, because the easy thing to do, especially with the team being 5-11, is to say, the leadership stinks, McCoy, this and that. But you know what? One function of internal team leadership is everybody playing hard and staying focused, and they did play very hard to finish the season. So they got to get some credit for that. But then the question is, why did you allow these bad players to fester and do what they did and not straighten it out? I don't know.
Why didn't the coaches call out Swaggy Baker too, Steve?
Well, that's the easy answer, is what are you guys doing? Why is he on the field? Why wasn't he benched? Why wasn't he traded? You know, if this was a problem, the Bucks weren't exactly in the playoff hunt in the end of October, Ira. So I don't
know. Take his snaps away. That's how you get people's attention.
Where was Jameis? I think that's fair when you have a guy like Jameis who is the team leader and embraces that role, and it's his third year, not his first. I understand he's a young guy.
That's asking a lot, Steve.
It is asking a lot, but is it asking a lot from Jameis? If that's really who he is? I get what you're saying, and I agree. It's complicated, but to hear that the coaches really wanted that to happen and want more of that.
Now, Steve, let's not make more of it than it is. I mean, it's not like there's eight guys in that locker room that needed to get their ass chewed out. It's not. You and I are there all the time during the season. And there were a couple of problems, you know, well documented. We've mentioned Baker all year. Nobody was on Baker quicker than I was. I was on Baker by March 25th, you know, with that classic line. Good player doesn't like to practice. T.J. Ward came in. Steve, I'm not going to be a hypocrite. At the time of the move, I thought it was a good move. I thought it was an upgrade. Didn't work out. Ward looks like he's through. He was frustrated by his playing time. He didn't handle it particularly well. So, you know, it's not like, you know, there's an underbelly of eight malcontents in that room, Steve. And you know it and I know it. The problem children will be taken care of in the offseason. You won't see their likes again.
Yeah, and that's what makes this sad, because a lot of the problem children were new faces that were, you know, it's not Gerald McCoy's fault that they stuck Swaggy in there. It's something we have to watch going forward. Now, Ira, there was one thing on JoeBucksFan.com Wednesday that I went into, dove into the next generation stats, you know, where the NFL uses technology, tracks the ball, tracks players, jerseys, helmets, all that stuff. And it's all computer-based. There's no subjective element to it. And one of the things they track for running backs is eight men in the box. How often are they facing an eight-man stacked box? And Doug Martin in 2016 saw that 33.3% of snaps.
Okay.
And, of course, in 2016, he was league worst, 2.9 yards a carry. A lot of fans kept yelling, he's always facing the stacked box. You know, that's why.
Ganging up on him.
Yeah, no big running, no big passing threat to loosen things up.
He's got nowhere to go.
So, now meanwhile, he ranked 9th or 10th that year in stack boxes, according to these stats. And everybody who saw more of a stack box had a better yards per carry. But forget about that.
And the Bucs didn't have a lot of weapons in 2016.
Right, so here we go. Weapons for Winston, 2017 offseason, O.J. Howard. DeSean Jackson's going to open things up.
Godwin's here.
Jackson's going to take pressure off Mike Evans. He's going to open things up in the running game.
They can Howard's going downfield.
He's going vertical. Things are going to open up. Well, the next-gen stats are in, Ira. And Doug Martin, who was still the Bucs' primary ball carrier last year in 2017, the data shows exactly the same in 2017, 33.3% of the time stacked box. As a side note, Peyton Barber, 33.3% of the time he was there, stacked box. So,
And what were their average yards per carry, Steven?
Martin, 2.9. Peyton Barber, 3.9.
Correct.
And he was running behind a couple of backups most of the time, Barber. So what does that tell you? That all this open up the offense, loosen up the running game with the boxes and stuff because we have more receiving weapons, it didn't pan out. So is that a reflection on Dirk Cutter, the play caller? Is it a reflection on no respect for the wide receivers of the Bucs and the deep threat that they didn't believe?
My first thought is it goes to we're going to challenge Jameis Winston to beat us, and I think that's still standard operating procedure for defensive coordinators at this point. As good as Jameis's numbers have been at times, I still think that's the feeling. This is not facing Drew Brees over here at that point. It also puts the lie to this nonsense that, you know, Martin was facing, guys ganging up on him and nobody else on the Bucs was doing that. What you're trying to say, Steve, in your own inimitable fashion, is that this was an equal playing field for Barber and Martin. If anything, tilting in Martin's favor because he had the starting offensive lineman. See what happens when you mention Doug Martin?
People drive off the road. They can't handle it. Seizures are breaking out.
Anyway, I was trying to say that it puts the lie to that thing about, you know, they were ganging up on Martin because what you said was the 8 in the box was the same for Barber, and he performed a lot better.
Yeah, and in 2016 as well. It feels like opposing defenses weren't really making much of an alteration,
Steven,
for
until
DeSean
Winston
Jackson.
Starts hitting DeSean Jackson. That's exactly what it is. Until he starts hitting some of those 50 and 60 yard passes, which they haven't, there's going to be, let's turn Winston one dimensional and we'll take him apart. He'll make mistakes. What loosens that up is a couple of nice bombs to DeSean Jackson. That'll get that eighth man out of the box. Steve, one of the great questions of 2017, and there were a lot of them, but this one's near the top. Why couldn't Jameis Winston connect with DeSean Jackson on some deep balls? Why couldn't he do it? Now, one theory is Winston got hurt in week 2, and he was never the same, basically, until the end. Well, you might say that, but he played awfully well in Buffalo with a bum shoulder.
Yeah, the precision was off, and part of that's the injury, part of that's getting adjusted, part of that's...
They had no timing. DeSean Jackson and Winston had no timing last year. Yeah. I don't know why.
And also, if you look at those next-gen stats, I didn't write it up yet, Ira, but they track how much time the quarterback has to throw. Jameis had quite a bit of time to throw relative to the rest of the league.
We said pass protection was pretty good last year, Steve.
And it was. It is a strength. It's not the greatest in history, but it's definitely a strength of the team. I went back. I know you'll start making fun of me for listening to every podcast under the sun, but I went back the other day, Ira, and listened to an interview DeSean Jackson did with Schefter on a podcast right before he signed with the Bucs, and he was talking to him about his future. And DeSean,
this is maybe right before the free agency period?
Yeah, like a week before free agency 2017. DeSean Jackson said he wants to play a long time, but he recognizes that he'll probably make a transition to be a slot receiver. And he said, look, the slot guys are small. I came into the league watching Santana Moss transition from incredible outside threat to slot guy. And He's like, I know I can do that and be damn good at it. And he's like, I don't feel I've lost a step yet. But he said, when the day comes I've lost a step, or if I get with a team that needs me to do that, I become a slot receiver. To me, and I heard that, you know, I was thinking,
you know, what's interesting about that, according to Dirk Koetter? He hasn't lost a step.
Right.
He hasn't lost a step.
Right. But it got me thinking, you know what? If Godwin is the real deal on the outside, maybe Koetter gets out of the box a little bit and puts DeSean Jackson now in the slot. And who's going to cover this guy in the slot?
A lot more traffic over the middle of the field, Steve. You know, he's got a different skill set than a Wes Welker, you know, or an Amendola. Steve, he's a home run hitter. Always has been. DeSean Jackson, a home run hitter. I think he caught a 60-yard touchdown, at least one, every year of his career till last year. Every year. And sometimes, you know, two, three, or four of them. Last year was the anomaly. Interesting thought, Steve. Interesting thought, because Godwin, you know, he might have given us a glimpse of what's to come in that very final snap.
Look, the season ended with a home run shot.
Home run shot.
And then what we waited for all year, we get on the
perfect
last
timing.
On the
beautiful
last play.
Yeah.
The season ends on a home run shot.
On an audible.
The DeSean Jackson thing scares me, Ira, because if this season starts off and they don't connect in the first couple of games, it's going to be tension and stress. And I just hope Koetter maybe crafts some more things in the offense for Jackson to avoid all that pressure on them connecting strictly on the deep ball.
You want the ball in DeSean Jackson's hands.
Yes. So if you can't do it deep, you better have a lot of other plans short. We saw some of it. We just need to see more.
A bubble screen. You know, the Chiefs used Tyreek Hill in some inventive ways, Steve. They do. Now, they got Kareem Hunt. When you got Kareem Hunt, especially what he did the first month of the year and the last month of the year, when you got a stud back like that, it frees you up to be a lot more creative.
So, Ira,
speaking of my Chiefs, boy, big trade.
I was just going to ask you, before we head out, I have to ask you about Alex Smith now going to the Redskins.
I don't really understand that move from a Redskins point of view. I think Cousins is better than Smith. Smith's decent. But it still irks me that on 3rd and 8, you know, in critical situations, Smith's going to throw a 5-yard pass because he doesn't want to throw an interception. He's going to throw a 5-yard pass, and then they're going to punt. That's not what I want out of my quarterback, and that's why the Chiefs can only go so far, in my opinion. It's not all Alex Smith's fault. Cousins has a better arm. I don't know what Washington's thinking. You know, Alex Smith is no youngster, Steve. I don't think the Redskins are here to do any damage in the next year or two. And by then, who knows how effective Alex Smith's going to be. So, you know, look, Jay Gruden made a call on Kirk Cousins. Jay Gruden knows what he's doing. He knows what a good quarterback looks like. From a Chief perspective, I thought it was a great move because they got to make Mahomes the starter, if not this year, the year after. Get what you can for Smith. And the cornerback that they got's pretty darn good. He's going to help the Chiefs. And a third-round pick.
When I look at this, Ira, I think, okay, you're a big-time Chiefs fan. You know the roster inside and out. Does this put the Chiefs in more of a rebuild mode? And if so, is there anybody on that roster the Bucs could use?
Look at you. Look at you.
I mean,
no, they're not in a rebuild mode. They've won the AFC West the last 2 years. Mahomes played the final regular season game.
One game.
Against Denver. One game. And looked good. And looked good. I don't think the Chiefs are laying down to anybody. Denver's in disarray. San Diego is, you know, an 8-8, 9-7 team. And who knows what Gruden's going to do with your Raiders over there, Steve. So,
well, Ira, come on. Now, San Diego's a hell of a football
team. A lot
team.
Of people think Mahomes is the real deal, Steve. The real deal.
I haven't.
And look at the success of some of these young quarterbacks.
Yeah, I haven't watched him play. I'm just asking you. You're the Chiefs expert.
No, I don't think it's rebuilding.
But don't sleep on San Diego. They're loaded. That defense is loaded.
They're a pretty good team.
And they've got a quarterback. And that's a special team there that just, if they didn't have that crappy start 0-4.
Rivers ain't getting any younger, though, Steve. He's not.
No, but there's plenty of old quarterbacks, and he's still good. All right, Sage, good luck.
When next we
Minnesota?
Speak, Steven, next Monday or whatever, the Lynch verdict will be in, Steven.
It'll be in, and whatever happens, I really want to nip in the bud all the idiots who are going to be online, some in the media, some not, who are going to blame you somehow for not getting Lynch in. You put in the prep. You put in the effort. You take it seriously. I've read your speech. You delivered the speech. Not in the full dramatic effect, thankfully, as we sit here in Panera at Newport Richey. But,
yeah, I'm coming in wearing a number 47 jersey, Steve. That's the way you do it.
I think you'll make as strong a case as could be made. And
then it's in the hands of the voters.
And so, then Steve, if it goes back next year, you know, you make a different case. You find a different angle find some different ways to do it. But good luck. You know, have fun. You got the Merlin Olsen lunch. You'll be shaking hands. We expect some stories.
I might call you Saturday when I get out of that room and give you a heads up on what happened.
Yeah, see, here's how this goes, Ira, right? You're supposed to tell me what happens, and then I write it up, but I schedule it for when it's appropriate to publish it, right?
That's correct.
So that's how it goes.
In other words, you show discipline.
Yeah, and then I don't have to watch the TV show at night and the drama.
But you don't get it out before it's supposed to get out.
No, you just give me a heads up. That's
a
how
little,
it goes.
A little heads up.
Be good, man. Stuff your face. Soak in all the free food you can possibly maneuver. And we'll see you next week.